Hey, everyone, and welcome to my podcast, Insights by Ben Siegel. The name of the podcast was based on an idea and notion that every episode you will have one insight or one nugget of knowledge after listening to our spectacular guest speakers. I'm Ben Siegel, Managing Director at Private Wealth at UBS Financial Services. Our team is called Connor and Siegel Partners, and we're based in New York City. After the podcast, I can be reached at benjamin.siegel@ubs.com, S-E-G-A-L. Today, we have a very special guest, Jeff Webb. He's not affiliated with UBS, and his views are his own. Our guest, Jeff Webb, is the former CEO of Varsity Brands, a well-respected cheerleading company. Jeff, big welcome. You're the GOAT of the cheerleading industry. How do you see the industry going forward?
Oh, it's going to be very interesting. You know, it's now a global sport. You get an international federation with 119 different countries, a world championship, Olympic recognition, just continues to be very popular at all levels in this country. So I think now it's the global development is kind of the new frontier. So that's going to be very interesting to watch.
Tell me a little bit about the Olympic Committee.
A group of us a number of years ago were looking at kind of beginning to see the fact that the domestic participation was becoming saturated. It had become so popular that it was hard to see much growth, and we were starting to get, through some of the ESPN television shows which I hosted, we were getting inquiries from other countries about how do we do this? How do we start a team? And so we started sending instructors really all over the world at our expense to begin to help coaches, train athletes, set up programs. And eventually that kind of morphed into an actual federation, because what we found out was that in most countries, sport is handled differently, especially youth sports, than in this country. You know, as you know, in this country, we have this large, comparatively affluent middle class, and we want to start a sports team in our neighborhood. We just do it, right? So that's kind of how it works. Don't need anybody's permission, just need a field, right?
Right.
In other countries, it's more top down. They don't have that middle class that's capable of doing those things. And to get equipment, to get facilities, to get coaches, you know, to put on events, you've got to have government support. And that means money. And what we also found out was in many of these countries, to get that support, your sport has to be recognized by the International Olympic Committee. You have to have an international federation. So we began this journey nearly 15 years ago to do that. And I should write a book about it. We'll talk about it. But we were able to do that a couple of years ago during the Tokyo Olympics. We finally made it, and we had to do a lot of things, jump through a lot of hoops, but we made it. And so, you know, again, I think the stage is set for pretty great global development here over the next 10 years.
Well, it sounds like you maybe should be Secretary of State if you can do that in all these countries. It must be pretty difficult.
It's my other interest, as you know.
So when you were sitting back in your apartment back in the day, and you're originally an entrepreneur and you happen to be in cheerleading, dance, entertainment. As you reflect over your lifetime, what are the two most important experiences that you wish you knew when you first started?
You know, I think that maybe not when I first started, but a little bit later. My father died when I just started the company. And when I got to the point where I needed to do something more sophisticated financially, structurally, I wish that I'd known more at that time how to do it. Probably gave away a little bit too much of the company. And, you know, as you know, once you do that, you're on the merry-go-round, right? Don't get me wrong. It turned out pretty well over the long, long haul. But I think that was something. I think the other thing is understanding that you're going to make mistakes. I'm one of these people. I'm always looking forward, always want to try to do something new. And some of the errors that I made along the way just tore me up. Now, as I look back, I realize would not have been able to get to where we got if I didn't have that same philosophy. That's just part of it. You're going to make mistakes, but the most important thing is to be aggressive. Don't bet the ranch on something new, but be aggressive and understand you're going to make some mistakes.
When you were against the ropes, because I think every entrepreneur I've ever met has been against the ropes, what kept you in the game?
Well, a couple of things. First, I had a lot of people depending on me, people who worked for the company. But the other one, and you've probably seen this in your career, this is a dirty little secret that most entrepreneurs, true entrepreneurs, don't want to talk about. And when I say entrepreneurs, I don't mean somebody that just opened the bar down the street, which that are now called entrepreneurs. I'm talking about somebody who's built something over a long period of time, said strategic growth. But what they won't admit is the other great driver is fear of failure. Your whole persona, your ego, is tied up in that business and that concept. And if it fails, you're a failure. That means it's probably not accurate, but that's the way you look at it.
Fear of failure is very big. The one advantage America has versus Europe, you can come back from failure. But sticking in there, the fortuitousness of having that is really a big deal. So when you look at people who are in your industry, young girls and boys who are in cheerleading and dance, what attributes do you think they need to be successful?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to have the right kind of leadership. You know, coaching, I think, is very important. I think it's important in every youth sport right now. My kids were not really actively involved in cheerleading. You know, they're grown now, but they were both very involved in high-level soccer. And I saw my share of good coaches and bad coaches. I know the effect that it can have. So I think that's a really important thing. But I think that being part of a program or a team that really keeps things in perspective, that's really there for the right reason, that teaches kids to be gracious winners and gracious losers, because we're all going to have both, right?
Throughout your life.
In your life.
There's no doubt about it.
I've always told my kids from the very beginning, you're going to have good things and bad things happen to you, right? We all are. And it's how you learn to handle both. And I think in this day and age, we don't do a good enough job with our young people about teaching them how to do both.
So you would say that the lessons to be learned, the life skills, are as being able to accept winning and failing and how to come back from failure.
Absolutely. And that failure is not really, I mean, think about a soccer game, right? You lose 2-1. It's not the end of the world. Nobody's going to remember in 2 weeks, first of all. And so understanding that losing a game or losing something or having, you know, maybe even losing a job or having losing an account as a salesperson is not the end of the world and not something you should feel guilty about. But realize if you've tried as hard as you can, you did your best, that's good enough, and you come back the next time.
But also learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely. Learn from your mistakes. What can you do differently? What can you do better?
Right. And so when you've met a tremendous amount of parents, and it's very interesting because I meet a lot of people who are in cheerleading, and I mentioned Varsity Brands, and bar none, they all have a big smile.
And they're, that's good to hear.
And they all reflect about it as a positive time in their life. So what would you tell parents who encourage their children to, who are cheerleading or dance or some activity, what would you tell them?
Well, I think it's important for kids to be involved and to help them find something that they feel good about being a part of. Now, sometimes when they're younger, they have to be pushed a little bit. That's part of being a grown-up, is having perspective. But if you try hard enough, you can usually expose them to enough things that they find something that they're good at and they enjoy doing it. And then when they do, give them all the encouragement that you possibly can.
So, you know, it, to me, when I mention people, I have a friend, he has a cheerleading business, and they like look at me, and I said, it was very, very large. And then I tell them how large it was. They step back. When in your career did you feel like you finally made it? And what did you do different after that?
Mine was such a gradual ascension, if you will, that, you know, I'd never set a particular goal for myself. I want to be this big. You know, I started on a journey and a concept, and I just wanted to make it better and bigger and to provide more value to more people. Sounds a little corny, but it's true. And I didn't start out going, if I do this and do it well and create this new thing, I'll make a lot of money, right? You know, I'll take the money, but it was never the center of what I wanted to do. And so when I look back, I had one moment that this was about 5 years ago. It was one of our largest competitions in Orlando, and it's, you know, it's got thousands of people, and it's at Disney, and 3 or 4 venues, 2 television shows going. It's a whole weekend, the end of the last day, and everything was kind of wrapping up. And I walked outside just to get some fresh air, just kind of finished with the television show. And I could look around, and all these things were going on. And there were thousands of people, and there was a lighted field, and all these kids were practicing, and their siblings were playing, and people walking by. You know what? Like you were saying a minute ago, everybody had a smile on their face, right? Now, not everybody won, but that experience. And literally, I had this kind of epiphany. It's like this emotion came over me and I got very emotional. It just happened. And this is when people usually go, yeah, you said, look what I've done, right? But that wasn't what it was. What hit me was, how lucky am I? How lucky am I? How fortunate, how blessed to have been able to build this company, this organization from my apartment with, you know, but to be what it's become and to be able to have this kind of effect on so many people and to be able to have it as a career and to hire all these people and make it good, have let them have good careers and support my family. I had that overwhelming feeling of just being very fortunate.
Yeah. So you would say love and the passion of what you do helps you to really hit your goals.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I can honestly say not one time in my life have I awakened and gone, oh, I've got to go to work. You know, not one time.
Yeah. I find that if you have that, you can't make it.
Yeah.
It's not there. But you said something very interesting. First of all, I don't think our viewers know that you have over 300,000 girls and boys that go to camp every year, and you've touched millions of lives over a long period of time. But one of the things that's most fascinating to me is how you were able to take your product and put it on the big screen. So can you tell us that story, how you got into Disney?
Disney and ESPN.
Yeah, ESPN.
Sure. Well, when I started my company, I didn't realize I was undercapitalized, and every familiar story, right? Every year as we were growing, it worked from the very beginning. I mean, we were actually profitable the first year. I think we made like $1.50 or something like that. But there was a big appetite for what we were doing, adding this kind of acrobatic concept, the cheerleading, and really changing it, making it more like a sport. And we didn't have enough money to capitalize our growth to expand nationally. And, you know, but this time, this was like 7 or 8 years after we'd started. And so he said, well, how can we get people to pay us to come to them? Because what we had was a very hot commodity.
And this is the early 80s.
This was like 1979. And so why don't we get cheerleading on television? And people went, how's that going to work in a game or at a camp? How would that do? How would that work?
Did anybody say, hey, that's a great idea?
No. But the answer to it was, well, why don't we create a situation where they can compete? And we'd done some things at some of our camps with music. And we said, why don't we have them compete with a routine with music and just be entertainment? And so that's where we started and was introduced to a gentleman with a company called TVS here in New York. It was a sports syndication company. In those days, if you were on TV, it was one of three ways, either local, one of three networks before Fox, or syndication, where it was on a different time.
I still remember the rabbit ears.
That's right. Yep. That's right. So a friend of mine was a commentator for the Southeastern Conference basketball game of the week. They didn't have, you know, not every team was on TV every year. There's like one game for each conference. And it was done by this syndication company here in New York, TVS. So I called him. He introduced me to George Gallup, who was the gentleman who's president of TVS. First time I'd ever been to New York City.
Oh, that must have been an experience.
Yeah, 28-year-old college kid or Southern kid. So I came up and met George, and they were doing all kinds of big-time sports, you know. And so I told him about cheerleading, that, you know, here's how it works. I had all these pictures, a few little, some film, some video. And I mean, he didn't really quite get it. And I said, well, why don't you come down one of our camps and just see this stuff? And so he came to a camp in Tennessee, saw all the acrobatics, and I started explaining to him how you would put this together and what it would look like. And he called me the next week and said, you know, I really like that. We need something different. He said, I'll do it. Gave me a contract. I'll just say it now. It's been so long. He paid us a $50,000 rights fee. Now, this was a long time ago. That was a lot of money, and I would have done it for free. Yep. I would have done it for free.
But sure, you would have.
Yeah, we would have done it for free. So, okay, now we got to create a show. We have to create an event, which we have three or four people working with me at that point, and we invited 20 teams that we just knew who were good teams, and we called it a championship. There was no other cheerleading competition, and then we decided we had to have it someplace that was going to be fun for everybody because there was only going to be one winner. Everybody else is going to be mad. So we said, let's have it someplace fun. So let's have it at Disney World. So George Gallup from TVS and I went to Orlando, made an appointment with Disney, go out and meet with the marketing director. I give him the big pitch about here's what it is. It's an all-American activity. The brands will be great together, blah, blah, blah. And so I get finished. He's very polite. I get finished with the conversation. He said, young man, I was young then. He said, we don't do concepts here. Kind of showed George and I the door. We were driving back to the hotel down Interstate 4 from Disney, both depressed as hell, and we passed a sign that said SeaWorld. We got off the interstate, went into SeaWorld, met their marketing director. He agreed to host the show at one of their venues, and we did it. It got great ratings. 3 years later, when the contract was up, George left TVS. He went to ESPN as one of the first VPs of programming, and we went with him. ESPN was in 5 million homes. Nobody even knew what it was. And there was no major sports. I think there was us and billiards and alligator wrestling or something. And anyway, so we go to ESPN. And as ESPN's footprint grew, we added other events. Our exposure grew. And it worked. People paid us to come to them.
And now, how big is the events today?
Well, I left Varsity a couple of years ago. I'm focusing on the international now, but there are hundreds of events all over the country. There's national college championship, high school national championship. In the club space, the gyms, there's all-star world championship. The ICU, our international federation, has a world championship that features 70 different countries. So the competition part of it is big. And competition serves as a great showcase to really demonstrate how athletic it is and what these kids can put together. It's amazing.
And how do you think that helps the youth of America?
You know, I've always felt very strongly that involvement in cheerleading, but frankly, involvement in other youth sports as well, is really important. And I know with the whole video craze and all the kind of things you hear now, some people are minimizing it. I think it needs to come back. I think being part of a team, having to be somewhere at a certain time, having to accept the good and the bad or the shortcomings of your teammates, learning to win and lose, all those kinds of things are important. So, and I think cheerleading is like that in spades. I think because of the way the routines are done and the fact that you're doing all these skills and stunts where you depend on each other, it builds a special kind of bond. So I've seen it. I've seen it all my life. It's one of the things that kept me motivated.
So let me get this straight. You're driving down and you see SeaWorld and you just call them up or just walked in there. And can you imagine if you didn't do that? Like that motivation, that drive that made you do that, like you weren't going to give up.
Yeah, I've thought about what it would have been like, what we would have done. Would we have said, not a good concept, let's do something else? We thought we were going to get Disney immediately. It made so much sense, but of course, we were negotiating with ourselves.
Right.
And it's easy to do, right? So yeah, I've wondered myself what it would have been like, but it was like total serendipity. When we walked in to see the marketing director was there, we sat down with him, we explained it, and he said, we've been trying to get our parks on TV for a long time, let's do it. And they built us a stage at the water ski theater. If you've ever seen that, you know, there's water. And then and the stage kind of from the beach went out into the water. So if you went out of bounds, you were, you know, in the water. So that was the first real kind of modern cheerleading competition.
So it seems like your whole career, you've been thinking out of the box. And that's probably a strong message to young entrepreneurs is that the chosen path is not always the right path to make your business successful. And just trying to always figure something out where you can get your product or your service out there.
Yeah, I think one of the keys is just never stopping, is always looking for what's new. What's a better way to do this? How can we expose our product, our service? Is there a better way? That kind of that sense of continuous improvement, not only in quality, but in your ability to distribute and get recognition for what you're doing and more people to be aware of your product.
Yeah, the Japanese use that concept called Kaizen, which is constant improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look back, how were you able to define your brand?
It started as Universal Cheerleaders Association, and it was just education. It was strictly camps. And then as we added the competitions and we also added a uniform component, we had to have something that we felt tied everything together, and Varsity was a great term that we felt like, you know, represents school. And there was no club cheerleading at that point. It was all school. So that was it. And then it was just a matter of using our sub-brands for uniforms for camps or whatever and saying a varsity brand, but just talking about it all the time.
So to finish up here, your next path is to try to get Olympic status. So can you go into that a little bit?
Sure.
And that's a tough organization to crack, I would imagine.
And the IOC has been around for a while. They have certain ways of doing things, and not everybody agrees, but you can't argue with their success. It is one of the strongest brands in the world, and has been for a long time. And we had to decide early on, is do we want to be a part? Do we want to try to go outside? But we realized that to be able to expand globally, which was the driver. It wasn't getting in the games. That wasn't the driver. Getting in the games would be great because it would help expose, as we were talking about, expose the sport more. But to be able to expand globally, to be able to make it available to young people all over the world, in which we believed in, we had to go that route. You have to get recognized by the IOC for the other countries to support your sport and make it available to the young people who want to participate.
Right. So I know you're a big believer in the United States and thank America for all your accolades, but what message can you give to America based on your business experience that you hope they carry on as your legacy?
You know, I think that supporting and celebrating companies or organizations really that try to promote and that embody really the kind of values that build character, that help people develop self-confidence, understand that they can do things that they didn't think they could do, and that those are the kind of organizations that need our support. It's not just, and there are many worthy organizations that, you know, are philanthropic, and there are people that need a hand up, and then we help out with things. But there are also organizations and companies that are trying to involve people, and they're trying to do the right things, and I hope that's kind of the way it's remembered.
Well, good. Well, Jeff, thank you very much. Thank you everything that you've done for the youth of America. Thank you for your contributions, and very much thank you for the insights you gave us today.
My pleasure. Great to see you, Ben.
Same here.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.